Welcome to a special edition of the Ross Safari Podcast, here to help raise money for binturong conservation. Hello, I'm John Rossi. I'm a touring drummer with a passion for animal conservation. When I'm on the road, I spend as much time as possible visiting zoos, aquariums, and conservation organizations. Now, I want to share those places with you. I'll be talking to keepers, vets, conservationists, anyone who can help me in my mission of connecting my people to animals through their people. Join me on my Ross Safari. Hello, 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 and welcome back to a very special episode of the Ross Safari Podcast. So y'all, if you know me at all, you know that I am obsessed with binturongs. They are one of my absolute favorite species. The logo of my podcast has a binturong on it. That logo is also my tattoo, so there is currently a binturong on my right arm. I own every plush binturong that I have been able to find in the United States, and I actually own two that don't exist really anywhere else because I found a person online who was willing to design some small crocheted binturongs for me. So I have one of those, and Zoe has one of those, and then a few of the incredible people at the Greensboro Science Center got those for being so kind and letting me get to know the bintlets. So I am crazy about binturongs. And surprisingly enough, I'm not the only one who is that crazy about binturongs. And you know, it turns out that binturongs need our help. So one of those people who is wildly crazy about binturongs is named Kirsty MacDonald. And Kirsty is a zookeeper in Scotland who is currently hosting a fundraiser to raise money for AB Conservation, which is the binturong conservation organization. And I have been a fan of theirs for a while. I think they do amazing work. And I am so excited that Kirsty is doing this fundraiser. It is beautiful. It is awesome. It makes me happy. It's a cool fundraiser, too, because it is both a raffle and a sale. You can buy raffle tickets to try to win some binturong merch, or you can just buy the merch directly, and the money goes to AB Conservation. So I saw this online, and I got very excited, and I immediately reached out to Kirsty. And of course, I was like, yo, do you want to promote this on my podcast? And she did. And so here we are with a bonus episode in which you are going to hear all about Kirsty and the animals that she cares for, including the two binturongs that she cared for who were elderly and, you know, have since moved on from this world, but who inspired her to do this fundraiser. And I'm excited to share the story. I am excited to share the fundraiser. And I'm actually going to be helping with the fundraiser in my own Ross Safari way, you know, other than putting out this episode, which will hopefully help. So all of the details are in the episode. I'm also going to make sure that there are links and explanations of everything in the show notes. And I will be posting stories on Instagram and Facebook so that you can find all of these things. Go to the fundraiser, get yourself some cool bint merch, get yourself into the raffle, and help support these amazing animals. And if you need to be convinced that they're amazing, wait till you listen to this episode and learn all about the two binturongs that Kirsty took care of. It is such a good time. So yeah, make sure you go in with an open mind, open heart, and open purse strings. And without further ado, here is my interview with Kirsty MacDonald. All right, so let's start off by you introducing yourself and telling us why you're here today.
Hi there, my name's Kirsty MacDonald. I'm a zookeeper, been a zookeeper for about 8 years now, and I've just launched a fundraiser for AB Conservation, which is a project based around binturong conservation.
Yeah, it is, and I am a huge binturong lover, so I am very excited about all of this. And we will definitely talk about your fundraiser and encourage people to go and help you raise funds by giving you said funds. I'm so curious, you know, binturongs are not the most common animal for people to be passionate about. And I say that as a guy who has a tattoo of one on his arm right now. Oh. So, you know, So tell me, you know, your journey to, we'll talk about your career, but like, what made you fall in love with binturongs?
I think the fact that they're just so unique, you kind of look at them and it's hard to believe that they exist in the nicest way possible. The sort of black shaggy coat, long tail that also helps them around with balancing, hanging off of stuff. They're agile like a cat, walks like a bear. And of course those little ear tufts as well. They just look as if they're like something out of a sort of animated film rather than an actual real life animal, and they're just very endearing as well. And I was actually very fortunate to get to work with them so quickly in my career. They were always kind of the top, one of the top animals that I'd love to work with. And yeah, just about a year in, I was able to make that come true. And yeah, I was even more in awe of them once I actually got to know them and work with them.
That's awesome. I feel like a lot of times when it comes to animals, you know, you have a dream animal, but then do they live up to the dream is always the question. And it's pretty cool that these goobers did for you. So that's so cool that you have such experience with them. So I know that we only recently encountered each other through this fundraiser. Mm-hmm. So I know you said you were listening a little bit, but I'm guessing you don't know this. But like I said, binturongs are one of my heart animals. And if you look at the logo for the podcast and everything, they're one of the four animals on there.
I did notice that. Yes. I was like, fantastic logo.
Yes. And I have met a few and gotten to hang out with some and had some shoulder time with the binturong. So I am very passionate about these animals, and I'm very excited to swap stories and hear all about your experience. So before we get to that, though, let's start off about like who you are and your career. So did you always know that you wanted to be a keeper, and what was your path like?
Yeah, so basically, I'd always been sort of the dream to be a zookeeper, but I never really thought that it would happen. And I was trying to kind of find other pathways. And then it was around about sort of that sort of 13, 14, when you're kind of asked, well, right, okay, start planning your future. What is it that you're actually wanting to do? And I just thought, well, any path that I'm picking is going to take a few years to get there. So why not go for the main aim? And I'd already done some sort of experiences. I was at a horse riding yard for years and did some volunteer work and all that sort of stuff. So I'd kind of got the start of a good experience just working around animals and the sort of the fun side, but also the hard work side. And then, yeah, just kind of knuckled down. And I definitely took the longer way around, but it was fun. So I did a couple years at an animal care college to get some animal care qualifications. And then I went to a university and did a degree in zoology. But within that degree, I actually took a year out and did placements at different zoos to kind of build that fundamental zoo experience. And yeah, within the first couple of weeks of my first sort of zoo internship, I was like, yeah, this is definitely what I want to do. And it kind of confirmed that then and there. And then, yeah, was very lucky to, in my last semester of university, to get a job at a zoo. And I've been there ever since.
That is awesome. I love that. I love how much you put into it too, like getting the you know, the kind of pre-university work and then university and all of that. And then, so you said you've been at the zoo for 8 years, right?
Yes, yeah, 8 years, literally just last month. So it's been a quick 8 years, but also feels like you've been there kind of as part of the framework now.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, that's a good amount of time. And so was your time meeting the binturongs when you started working with them your first time meeting bins, or had you had experience with them already?
That was first time, yeah. So it was definitely that sort of excitement moment of, okay, these are obviously one of the favorite animals. And yeah, they lived up to expectations and more.
that does not surprise. So who were the Binturongs that you worked with?
So we had a male called Ali, and he was actually by himself initially when I started working with him. And about 6 to 8 months later, he was joined by a female called Poppy. And introductions with them went great, and they were thick as thieves from then, really.
That's awesome. And yeah, so tell me about them. Like, make my listeners fall in love with these two.
So Ali was an older gentleman. He was a little bit more wild in his younger days, shall we say. Before I started working there, the previous keepers did some sort of training with him to help get him used to the keepers and such, because he was a little bit of a wild thing. He got straight into the way of training and really enjoyed it. So when I started, I was lucky enough to help out with the training, and then took that on in subsequent years. And yeah, he was always a keen bean. And even in his later years, so he actually lived to be, he would have been 25 next month. So he was a couple months away from turning 25. So he was an old boy. But even in his later years, he was still so enthusiastic for training. And all the training that we did was based around his healthcare. So as he got older, there was a couple of health ailments that he might need, such as trimming his claws because he wasn't as active, and also doing a little eye spray because he got a little bit of a dry eye. And he was always up for it, for jumping on the scales, making sure his weight was all right. And you'd be fast asleep, and the second that he'd hear you entering the enclosure, you'd hear his little paws getting up, and then he'd be on his way to go to his training area. So he was always enthusiastic for that side of things. Poppy, she was I say that Ali taught me a lot and Poppy tested it. she was definitely one of those animals that you had to spend so much time with in order to just get to know her. There's those animals that respond to you straight away and are kind of like, okay, this is great, I'm all in. And then there's those other animals that are like, actually, give me a minute here because I'm doing this on my terms and I'm going to decide what I'm doing. She was much more on that side of things. So one of my kind of most sort of favourite moments of my career is actually spending the time with her and gaining her trust, because when she arrived at the zoo, she was definitely one of those animals that was like, I'm just going to stay over here and observe you from over here and you can do your own thing and I'll do my own thing. So definitely building that trust with her, to the point that it took a long time and everything was done on her terms, but we eventually actually managed to get a weight on her by her walking into a crate voluntarily that was sat on some scales. And the first time that she did that was definitely like a highlight, because it had taken so much to get to that point with her. And at that moment, she fully trusted us. So that was definitely a kind of career high, as silly as it sounds.
No, not at all. No, I totally get that. I think, I think it's interesting because a lot of people, especially people who listen to this or keepers that I talk to or whatever, like, yeah, it's the same story over and over again, like, as far as training, like, hey, we're training and we're training and training and, you know, we're doing voluntary blood draws or voluntary weights, or like, it's the same thing over and over. But each time it's a different individual animal and you have to take the steps to figure that out. And when it's an animal that's difficult, it means the world. Every proper, bit of growth is huge. I completely love that. That's awesome.
Yeah, she was definitely, when you got sort of that interaction from her and that willingness, it was, yeah, definitely worth its weight in gold.
That's awesome. So in terms of these two, you said that they got along really well together. What did that look like for you?
So we did the introductions. We started really slow with them in a sort of neutral enclosure. And then we introduced each other scents to them. And then once they were happy with the kind of interactions that they were having, they weren't showing any sort of stress or potential negative behaviours, we started the sort of mesh introductions. And they seemed to be like cool with each other and not showing any sort of dislike to each other. And so we opened up the slides and they went in and were great. Apparently previously, before I was there, but the last female wasn't as keen to have Ali around. she prepared her own space. So Ali was often told where his space was, and it wasn't really next to her. Whereas Poppy was much more like happy to have him around. Don't get me wrong, there were definitely times where she was like, okay, I need some space now. But for the most part, they were quite often either in the same area where he would be inside a little kind of viewing box and she would be sat on top, or vice versa. So they were always pretty close by to each other. We actually were lucky enough that pretty much the first season that she had after being with Ali, they actually had a little Binturong cub. So that was an absolute kind of ecstatic moment as well, to have a little one being born as well. And Ali was then also the oldest first-time dad of Binturongs at the time.
Oh, wow.
He was 19, if I remember rightly. So it was a little bit of a shock to the system for him. He had to learn how to be dad around a very kind of running about, active little Binturong. But they both did great, and Poppy was a fantastic mum as well. And we were very... very proud of that little one. And of course, being from Scotland, he was called Haggis. So,
oh, you know. My gosh. Haggis the Binturong. Are you kidding me right now? That's
amazing.
No, 100%.
And he was born on Burns Day as well.
I don't know what that is because I'm in the US. But
Robert Burns Day, the day that you're traditionally meant to have haggis.
See, these are the cultural differences that we get to learn about here by having an international episode.
The exotic of Scotland, yes.
Yes. Oh my gosh, that's amazing. So, I have so many things, so many thoughts. I'm so excited. So, I don't know if you've heard this over in Scotland, but over here about 2 years ago, there was a zoo that had baby Binturongs, and I've seen them written as, Binturong kits a lot of the times,
yes,
or Binturong cubs. But 2 years ago, this one zoo decided to call them Bintlets, B-I-N-T-L-E-T-S. And I had never seen that before. And I Googled it and like nothing came up. And then a year later, a couple of other Bintlets were born and people started calling them Bintlets, and it started to become more of a thing. So on my podcast, I run with that. And not
Fantastic.
Only do I call them Bintlets, but I now call all animals lets. So like a red panda is a red pandlet. I know that's not right, but I don't care and I do it anyway. But did y'all use the term Bintlet, or have you heard the term Bintlet? I'm always curious about this.
Yeah, I've definitely heard it, and we did use it as well. We also had our own little adaptations as well, baby Binties as well. But yeah, it's nice that the Bintlet is becoming more popular. I just wasn't sure how well known it was over on your side as well. So, it's nice to kind of that people are getting so drawn in by it as well, that they're wanting to give it these sort of names and attention.
No, definitely. It's really cool. So I have a great relationship with the Greensboro Science Center, and they had Bintlets last year, Bianca and Monty. And I got to see them from the time that they were like still being bottle fed all the way through to now. They're like, you know, fairly well grown and out on exhibit and stuff. And I there was a phase where I went and visited them every month. It's like a 9-hour drive each way, but I went and visited them because they are just such amazing animals. And I, you know, over the years, having some cool experiences through the podcast, I've even gotten to like hold a couple week old Bintlet, and it's they're such amazing, cool little animals. So tell me a little bit about Haggis.
Yeah, they are really incredible. We definitely, well, Poppy was actually, she'd actually had bindlets before. So she was an experienced mum. So we had high hopes that she kind of knew what she was doing. But obviously it was her first sort of season and then bindlets with us. So we were still kind of figuring out what's sort of the best thing to do for her. In terms of that individual animal. So we, with her being sort of more kind of independent, I know what I'm doing sort of thing, we believed that we will just step back, we will do kind of let nature take its course, but we will obviously do feeds, check the enclosures, all that sort of stuff. But we didn't have any sort of hands-on interaction until the little one was about 8 weeks old, if I remember rightly. And that was when we did the sort of checks and microchips and all that sort of stuff. But in the meantime, we also had cameras in the enclosure as well, so that we could monitor them, because obviously if we're not seeing them when we're there, then obviously we still need to know that everything is good and going well. So we had cameras in the enclosure as well. And we had some fantastic footage caught on those with the little sort of little bindlets hanging by their sort of tails and running around after dad, who's like, okay, remember I'm old, please. Poppy just being a bit kind of like, okay, they're awake now. So we got some fantastic footage of that, and it was nice seeing that sort of process of him kind of finding his feet. And just getting to know the enclosure, getting to know us as well. And eventually we got to the stage where we were happy with how Poppy was doing, happy how Agus was doing, and I introduced the idea of training, because obviously we want to kind of make sure that the animals can partake as much as they can in their own healthcare. But also he was going to be moving on to another zoo eventually, so we wanted to get the steps ready so that when it came to the day, it was just a case of him toodling into the box and then being nice and smooth and not stressful for him. And he definitely was the absolute mix of both mum and dad. He was curious about training, but also a little bit kind of like, I don't know, and checking in with mum and being like, should I go? Whereas when he would see his dad interacting with the training side of things, he would get braver and be a bit more kind of like, okay. And then once he realised that actually you get some tasty treats if you just come over here and step into a wee box area and nothing happens to you, it's all good and positive stuff, he then came round to the idea of it and thought, this is actually great, I can do stuff for free treats.
it is amazing how effective that works on you know, bintlets and, you know, humans.
yes.
Very cool. So to branch away from bints for a second, what are some animals that you work with or have worked with other than binturongs?
So I've worked with the majority of my time, my career has been with carnivores. So I've worked with a variety of bears. We've had some Asiatic lions and Sumatran tigers.
Hold on, pause. Asiatic lions. That's really exciting. That's very rare.
Yes. We were actually lucky enough. So we had Jay and Roberta, who were our adults. And during COVID, we were actually very fortunate to welcome three cubs with them. So they were great fun to see growing up over the years. It was a shame that it happened to be during COVID because members of the public weren't able to see and appreciate them as much. But we were sure to put up all the videos and footage of them all as they were aging. So they were a fantastic little family group.
Oh, that's very cool. What else?
Asiatic short clawed otters.
Aww.
That are just complete chaos. We have 13 of them. Oh. So yeah.
I've always seen like two or four together.
Yeah, no, mum and dad got on very well. their last letter, we were kind of suspect. We were like, oh, I think there's maybe two in there. And when it came time to the time that we were like, okay, we need to clean that hole out because they've not moved them for a little bit and we needed to go in and do some cleaning up after them. When we opened up that hole and seen six little baby otters lined up in a row, we couldn't really believe it. And yeah, that was already on top of eight because we actually had 14. So, and we've just moved one on to another collection. So yeah, they're absolute chaos and keep us on our toes, that's for sure. And they know that they have numbers on their side as well. They will do the distraction technique where some will run up to you on one side and be like, hey, look over here, whilst the other ones are circling around behind you, trying to have any sort of flesh that they can.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. That must be quite the journey every time you're there.
Yes, definitely. We enter the enclosure with no less than three people. So it's always a little bit of a kind of like, okay, who's on defense and who's on cleaning?
I have to tell you, I have heard plenty of animals and species and exhibits and stuff where the rule is, you know, two people have to be there.
Yeah.
But I've never heard three before. And the fact that it's four otters is just amazing.
Yes, believe me, when there's 13 or 14 of them, there's times that you wish there was a fourth person because it's just absolute chaos and they know it as well. So we'll be cleaning the pool and there's kind of like a little boundary around the sort of top of the pool where we kind of ask them to stay out of. And, you know, they'll kind of walk up to the line and be like, will I? And you're like, just you stay out whilst I'm cleaning, please. And they'll just, it's like a kid that's kind of like, I can just step and poke that little bit there. And then, yeah, they're just kind of like, actually, nah, I'll go and play with this instead. And you're kind of like, okay, good idea.
That's adorable. I can't tell you how much I love that. So, tell me a little bit about what inspired you to do the whole fundraiser that you're doing.
Yeah, so I'd heard about AB Conservation a few years ago, and I'd really admired the work that they were doing, and I wanted to find a way of getting involved and helping support them. But you know how life is, especially when you've got a busy work life. Before you know it, 4 years of past and you're kind of blinked and that's it sort of thing. So I actually went to a Binturong conference towards the start of the year, and it was actually the sort of UK's first Binturong conference, and we actually met a representative from AB Conservation there, and it was really great and kind of it refocused you back into that sort of kind of like, right, how can we help conservation and help this specific conservation project out? And one of the main things was the idea of World Binturong Day. So that's actually on the 11th of May. And they always try and get zoos involved. And one of the main things is trying to get the message out to the members of the public of binturongs and exactly what they are and what's threatening them in the wild and what we can do to help them, because quite often as you previously mentioned, when someone asks you what's your favorite animal and you say binturong, they're like, a what? Because it's just not heard of very often. So one of the things they're trying to do is to kind of make binturongs more known and kind of engage people to want to save them as well, which I admire and I'm passionate about myself. So in the lead up to I'd had some ideas about what to do for World Binturong Day, and then sadly we lost our two. It was both their time and it was the right decision, and it's unfortunate that's just the kind of rough part of the job,
right.
But with them now gone, I wanted to do something almost in their memory. So I came up with this idea of the fundraiser, and I'm not the most artistic person in the world, but I do enjoy sort of little crafty things and stuff like that. So I came up with some ideas of different sort of Binturong merch, because it's not something that you can have widely available. And yeah, the reception that I've had so far has been amazing. And all the profits are going to AB Conservation to help out with their projects and try and continue to save this fantastic species.
That is wonderful. But I'm going to contradict you. Because the art that you did is actually awesome. Like, I got so excited about this because it's, you know, supporting an organization that I love, that is trying to save binturongs, obviously. But also because it all looks really good. Because part of the problem of being a binturong fan is simply that it is hard to find good binturong stuff because of all the reasons that you just said. And you have all kinds of good binturong stuff up here. I really love it. And so you're doing two different things, which I found interesting. You're doing a raffle or just a sale of the products. So can you kind of explain what those two things are and like what products you have available?
Yeah, of course. So my whole thing with this fundraiser as well was I wanted it to be that anybody could potentially contribute. We all are living in a time that there's not a lot of spare money around and we have to be careful, which I can completely sympathize with as well. So I wanted it to be made available to everyone, because there's nothing worse when you see a fantastic cause that you want to support, but maybe you've seen an item that's a little bit out of your price range and you're actually kind of like, I'd love to be able to do that, but I just can't. So I came up with the idea of the raffle in the hopes that even just that for £3, someone can buy one ticket, but they could potentially win the ultimate bundle. And that's one of every item that I've made. And it means that you've got a chance of getting it just for £3, or you can prefer to buy it individually. So if there's actually only one particular product that you're kind of crazy over, you can just get that one rather than potentially buying a few raffles and not maybe getting the one that you want. But yeah, so I came up with a couple different ideas. I thought, I haven't sewn since I was like 15. so I asked my gran if I could borrow her sewing machine, which she was ecstatic about. And started.
That is such a grandmother thing. That's so funny.
Yeah. It was the second that was asked, it was like, yep, take it. There you go. Fantastic. Go for it. It's been nice actually getting back in the way of it. And so, as I say, they're not. The products are not perfect. That's not sort of something that you could pass as expertise, but I think they're nice wee additions. So one of the items is a binturong cushion, and it's a 14-inch square with a kind of nice, almost rainbow-esque binturong on the front. I've also got some key rings that features a little binturong image on one side and then actually a photo of Poppy and Ali on the other side. And then we've got some stickers of some cute binturong art, and then also a World Binturong Day badge that has a little binturong on it that's holding a wee globe, and that can also be in a sticker form as well. And then we also have some water bottles as well, which actually has some interesting facts on the front of it about the binturong, including its conservation status. And then on the opposite side of it, it actually has the paw print from either Poppy or Ali. So it's a nice little sort of personal binturong paw for you on your water bottle.
Yes, which I think is ridiculous. I think that is, I was already excited about just who doesn't want a binturong water bottle in their life. But then I saw the paw print and I was like, well, that now makes it emotional too. So yeah, that was very cool. And actually you forgot one other thing. You also have some plushes available.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, so there's little mini plushies available as well. They're sort of like 14 centimetres long. So whilst we're not advocating that binturongs make great pets, because, you know, they demand respect as well, and there's definitely that mutual respect there. But you can contribute to a fantastic cause with AB Conservation, but have your own little mini plushy binturong in your own home that will not wreck your house or wreck you. Because whilst they do smell of popcorn, that smell does, what's the word, novelty of it wears, shall we say.
Fair. Well, and it also is a smell that's coming from like their urine. And so,
exactly.
You know, there's a whole lot of pee if you try and bring a binturong into your house.
Exactly.
Yeah, I love them so much, and I would never have one as a pet.
Yeah.
I will tell you, I will have all the plush ones available. And for my listeners in the U.S., there is shipping available to the U.S., and it's not devastatingly expensive. But one thing that is worth mentioning is that you cannot get any of this merch over here, even the plush binturong. And I am very aware of every plush binturong in the United States right now, because I have them all. But this is one that you cannot get in the United States. So if you are a binturong lover, if you are a person that loves plushies, if you like unique things, this is a great opportunity to get, you know, one of those. And then all of the other items are obviously very unique to this and very special, which I think is very important to point out, and which I had to point out because Kirsty is from the UK and people over there like to be very humble. So as I was listening to you talk about all of those things, Kirsty, and you're like, yeah, they're not perfect. And I'm like, shut up. They look amazing. I've seen the pictures. Don't dissuade people from doing this.
Well, that's very kind, I know, but I've really enjoyed doing it, and the response that I've had has been fantastic so far, and everybody's been happy with everything, so hopefully that's a good sign and more things to come. And we're kind of trying to get the word out about binturongs and also raise as much money as possible for AB Conservation, because they're just a fantastic project and can help save this sort of real life mythical creature.
Yeah, binturongs are they're so unique. And one thing, and you know, listeners who have been listening for a while, I know you've heard this before, but it's always so cool. But like, binturongs for me are the way that I came to understand what a prehensile tail actually means.
Yeah.
I knew the word, obviously, but having a binturong on my shoulders and then using its tail around my neck to like adjust and feeling all of the little miniature muscles move. I always kind of pictured it like a human arm where there were like a couple joints or what. I don't know what I really pictured, but the way that their tails move is just like it's astonishing. Prehensile tails are the coolest thing.
Yeah, they really are, and how they would use them, and even in captivity as well, the natural behaviour is still there, and also on an individual basis as well. So Poppy, she would always kind of walk, and her tail would be in line with her body, so it would be off the ground, and you would kind of see it. Her if she was on the ground, she would be kind of creating only paw prints as she went. Whereas Ali was much more casual, shall we say. So he would just let his tail trail behind him. So quite often when you would throw the shavings down, the sawdust down, and it would have a nice clean floor, Ali would have almost comical timing and be like, oh, you've just put them down, I'm going to come down to ground level. And you would just see his tail start to draw little patterns in the floor because he would just rather let it drag behind him. But he would still use it in the branches. But yeah, he didn't want to put that effort in when he was on the ground.
That's so funny. And that's one of my favorite things about this podcast is just getting to know the individual animals and like just the little differences between them. Like that is just so cute and so interesting to try and like get into their heads and wonder like why Poppy would always, you know, hold the tail up and Allie just was like, buh.
Yep.
That's really funny. Very cool. So how can people find this fundraiser?
So if they head to the official AB Conservation page and give them a like and follow, they can actually find out all about the conservation that they do. And there is a few posts on there about the fundraiser. But on Facebook, if they head to AB Conservation Fundraiser, that is the name of the page, or fundraising. And basically all they need to do is send a message to that page. There's a photo album that has everything that's for sale, as well as the raffle, which is due to end on the evening of the 28th UK time. But there will likely be another raffle. It might not be for the exact same things, but I do have one other item that I only have two of, and one of them has already been won. So the second one will be going up just a few days before World Binturong Day. So yeah, so if people are interested to find out about AB Conservation or want to take part in the fundraiser and donate, best bet is to head to Facebook and search for AB Conservation Fundraising. And yeah, just send me a message, and it's me behind it. So it'll be me that you're chatting to. And I really want to give a shout out as well to people from all different places across the world so far that have got in touch and either just talked about the wonders of Binturong and also or just donated as well, whether it be through raffle tickets, buying stuff, or just a donation. I really appreciate it, and I'm always happy to talk about all things Binturong. So best bets to head over to there.
And I will also have links in my stories and in the show notes and all of those things, because I highly encourage y'all to help out with this great cause. And I cannot believe that you are sitting here and telling me that there is a unique item and we don't even get to know what it is. You are such a tease. See, you say you don't do a lot of PR, but you're good at this because you have picked my interest. And now I'm like, well, now I have to keep checking to see what that is.
Well, you know, I have to keep some things under the hat. So, yes, stay tuned for that, because the kind of non-official end date is World Binturong Day. I'd like to do a sort of announcement then to see how much we have raised. But items will be available for the rest of the month if people are like, oh no, I missed out, and actually that was a fantastic cause, or, oh, I meant to send them a message, but I never got around to it. That page will still be there. I'll still be here shouting about Binturongs. So feel free to send a message. But yeah, we really want to get the word out before World Binturong Day and get people their badges so they can show with pride.
Very, very cool. I do have one other Binturong discussion we have to get before we wrap things up, though, which is you said something, and it is something that is commonly said, and I debate it a little bit, but don't worry, this is all in good fun. You said that Binturongs smell like buttered popcorn, and I have to tell you, I've met a lot of Binturongs, I've seen a lot of Binturongs, I've held some Binturongs. Only once in all of my time with Binturongs did I go to a place and think, oh, this smells like buttered popcorn, and that was at Brookfield Zoo. Every other time, I think they smell like corn chips, like Cheetos or Fritos. I don't know if y'all have those in the UK, but like, I don't know. It's not the same as like buttered popcorn to me. I know what like y'all are talking about. I don't know if it's my weird nose or not, but I always love asking people that are Binturong fans this. Do you actually think they smell like buttered popcorn, or do you think it's more of like a Cheetos, Fritos, corn chip, tortilla type thing?
Yeah. So in a word, for me, no.
Is this just a lie that we all tell everybody?
I mean, I find it was, I found when you were further away, there was definitely a hint of it. And you could be like, oh, yeah, that definitely smells of buttered popcorn. But for me, when you actually enter the enclosure and you're cleaning it out, scrubbing it out, and then you leave, and 3 hours later you're in a different enclosure, but you can still smell very strong Binturong that does not smell of buttered popcorn, then that's where I'm a little bit kind of like, maybe not. And I've done the same as well, where I've been like, is it my nose? Is it broken? Or is Yeah, so for me, I think from a distance, they are butter popcorn. But the closer you get, the less it gets similar.
Okay. Yeah, I like to joke because when I went to Brookfield Zoo in Chicago, and I've been there multiple times, and it's happened every time, they have this amazing, it's very like deep, you're kind of in the middle of it when you're looking in, so they go down and up, and just very large binturong enclosure. And it's the only time that like I walked up and I was like, this actually smells like popcorn. And then I started joking, and it's obviously just a joke, that the zoo is pumping the smell of popcorn in there just to, you know, keep the rumor going. But obviously I'm kidding about that. But yeah. So good. Okay. Well, thank you for your honesty about that.
No problem.
There's obviously one more thing that we need to do. So mm-hmm. It is time.
It's time now, don't you know? We've come to the end of the show. But there's one tale left to go. You're gonna laugh and say, oh no. It's time for the Rastafari Poop Story.
Hello?
Hello. So, yeah, sorry, from when I listened to it before, I heard the theme tune and stuff. So I was
I had all that in afterwards. But thank you for being so kind and waiting for the... You know, if this was a professional podcast, I would do that. But I'm just a goober trying my best, so...
No, fair enough. I absolutely appreciate that. I'm sorry.
No, I love that you were waiting. That's great. I'm probably going to leave all this in because I think that's really funny.
Oh, fantastic. Great. So the poop story.
Poop story.
So it's a little bit kind of indirect, but it is still a poop, what I would class as a poop story.
Poop story.
And controversially, it is not to do with binturong.
Okay, that's fine.
So we're taking a left turn here. So back when I was doing my internships, I was lucky enough to work with some black bears. And they are definitely, bears are up there for me as well, hence why I love bear cats so much. One day I was in the bear enclosure, the black bear was in the house, chilling, eating his food quite happily, whilst I was outside cleaning up his business. And there was an area in the middle of the enclosure where it was a bit denser, a bit more shrubs. So me being very committed and in it for the all experience, I was like, I feel like that's going to be a poop spot. And sure enough, it was. So I went in through this shrub and it kind of engulfed me with my little black bag and shovel in hand. And all of a sudden, all I could hear from the fence line was, wait, look, and I paused, and I realized, as I listened more, there was a family who were stood there, and they were like, the bear's in there, we've actually seen the bear. The bear was me. So they thought that they were seeing the movement, and the black of my bin bag and my work hoodie was what they were mistaking for a bear. And the sheer joy in their voice, and it wasn't one of those situations where it was someone going, oh, what's that funny animal? It was a genuine, they thought they were seeing the bear. So what did I do? I stayed in the shrub. I did not come out, and I waited for them to pass because I could not ruin their day by popping up and going, actually, it's just me. The bear's up there. Sorry. So I was doing the pooper scooping in the shrubs whilst pretending to be a bear, technically.
That's amazing. I love it so much. Well, thank you for doing this. Thank you for the fundraiser and for trying to raise awareness about binturongs and AB conservation and all of the things.
No problem at all. And thank you so much for inviting me on and for all the support. And more than happy to chat about binturongs all day long.
Awesome. Thank you. Okay, so welcome to the bonus contest part of this. So I'm adding my own contest to this contest. For the current raffle, which ends soon. Like, this is dropping on Saturday night in the US. I believe it's almost Sunday morning now in the UK. And this is ending Sunday night in the UK. So you don't have a lot of time for the first raffle, but also for the next one that she'll be doing closer to World Binturong Day. If you tell Kirsty you heard about or saw her fundraiser on Raw Safari, for every 5 raffle tickets you buy, you'll also get an entry to a Raw Safari raffle. And for every £5 you spend buying merch, you'll get an entry to the Raw Safari raffle as well. 3 winners will be chosen on World Binturong Day as part of this, and you'll get an adorable Binturong stuffy, different than the one that is part of Kirsty's whole thing, and a couple of Binturong stickers from a zookeeper friend of mine that does some amazing, amazing work. So I'll be posting more about that in stories on the gram and on Facebook and everything. But yes, please go look at the socials. Go follow AB Conservation. Check my stories for the link to get involved with this fundraiser. And you can also look at the show notes and just get your butt out there and go and support Binturong Conservation, y'all, because Binturongs are incredible. And if we lose them, I'm going to cry a lot. You'll get an entire episode that's just going to be me crying, sadly. But yeah, so thank you all for listening to this. I hope y'all enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed making it. I'd like to say a special word of thanks to my Red Panda level patrons, Dr. Laura Shank, Dr. Stephen Williamson, Barbara Bennett, and Jenny Owens. And remember, friends, the words Binturong conservation backwards are Noit av Reznok, Gnoru Tnib.
The Raw Safari Podcast is produced, hosted, and engineered by John Rossi. Editing and fact-checking by John and Dr. Zoe Rossi. Our theme song is Sevens by Nathan Burke, performed by Nathan and John. Interrupting John theme and additional voices by Taylor Isaac Gray. You can reach John directly on Instagram and Facebook at Raw Safari or by email at rawsafaripod@gmail.com. Raw Safari is part of the Daydreamer Media Network. Now, stop listening to me and go visit a zoo.